Hello, everybody. Today is May 21st, 2013. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com. And I have a very special guest with me today, which is Costa Macreas. And I'm sure many of you know he's the co-founder of ETLetsTalk.org. And, of course, his very famous revealing of himself in the documentary Sirius, which has flown all over the Internet. Everybody knows all about that. Exposing the government's secrecy regarding UFOs and their presence on Earth. And what's interesting is Costa's background is, coming from a software consultant out of Silicon Valley and really just diving into a passion of reconnecting us to the benevolent star civilizations that are visiting our planet. I was going to ask you, Costa, I think it's really interesting. How did you transition from a software consultant to this?
Well, I'm not sure I've transitioned yet. I started doing, but before I answer that, I want to thank you for having me on the show here and giving me the ability to talk about the passion here of what I'm doing. So thank you.
You are welcome. Very welcome.
And the answer is, well, I still have a day job, so I'm still doing software consulting. That's why I was laughing when you said transition. Yeah, I would love to transition and look in my, I would love to look in my rearview mirror and see the day job there, a wonderful, wonderful journey in the past, and then being able to work with ETLetsTalk.org full time. I'm in the process of making that happen and visualizing it. So right now I'm leading a double life, but it's a very transparent one. Still in the Silicon Valley, in the heart of left-brained, go-go-go, innovative kind of culture, which has its ups and its downs, as we all know. But while doing that, it has afforded me the ability to be working with ETLetsTalk.org in my spare time and energy and trying to launch, or not trying, but actually launching that.
Have you kind of noticed more and more difficulty having your foot in both boxes of the 3D versus that which you have a passion of bringing forth, you know, the awareness that we have an ET connection, that they are visiting us, they are very much wanting to connect with us?
That's really an excellent question, because I think that the answer to that also applies to many people, no matter what their mission. Mine may happen to be, you know, ET, but other light workers who have to support themselves, as you say, in a 3D kind of way while doing this other passion of theirs, face the same challenge. How do you keep a foot in both worlds? For me, it's I've learned to just very much flow with it. And I know that sounds like a really vague kind of but I can't describe it any other way. Just because of my personality nature and because I'm interested in so many things, all my life I've been able to switch from one thing and then switch over to the next thing and to the next thing. And so this is no different right now. It's very seamless for me. Do I wish I could do more of the passion part, as I alluded to earlier? Yes, I do. But for right now, you know, by day I can, you know, do QA and program computers and software and live in that world, talking the talk, going to the meetings, sometimes being part of a corporate structure. And yet I can come home and put my other hat on and switch over and go into another set of terminology, another concept.
It definitely allows you to not get bored.
Right.
And really challenges you to, I know this sounds crazy, but sync both hemispheres of your brain, because you sound like you're the IT nerdy, you know, guy who's totally into the science and the, you know, pragmatic and systematic way of doing things, right?
Yeah, I have all of that. I got a computer science degree, and ever since I was a child, I loved mathematics and science. I was into the space program like so many people of my generation in the 60s,
very cool.
Was inspired by it. So that part of me has always been there. But the artistic, mystic side has always been there too, because I was introduced to the UFO subject and to meditation and to yoga and to astrology, which I taught to myself at an early age, very, very early on, from the time I was 10 onwards, I was into these different types of subjects at the same time I was enjoying NASA and the space program. So that has always been a combination within me, the left brain, the right brain, the mystic, the occultist, and I mean occultist in a good way.
Yeah. Well, so how did you actually get ET Let's Talk going? I mean, how did you get that launched?
Well, it was built somewhat on the previous work I had done, being a volunteer for Dr. Stephen Greer since 2006, building a prayer and meditation group to support him and his projects. And there's a story there, which if you want to, I can tell you more detail. Okay. But I had spent quite a few years building a group there and just using email pretty much, the real basic stuff to keep people connected, keep the group together, keep growing the group. But with etletstalk.org, I had a running start then. And then when I found my partners, Jonathan and Lori, who had the same vision about etletstalk.org, then it was clear to me that we were going to take the next step and actually build a social community, a safe, reliable one where people could go and openly talk about who they are and what they're experiencing in a secure way.
Kind of like a ET Facebook kind of community.
Right. Not the same kind of user interface because it's more of a forum thread type of thing. But yeah, in spirit, you get the idea. It's a community.
Now it says here you have over 2,500 members and you're in 50 different countries. That's pretty good. Now you started this back in 2006, you said?
Well, I started the predecessor to this in 2006 in small groups. But etletstalk.org was actually launched, I believe, in October of last year, 2012.
Okay, so recently. That's the same as me. I started galacticconnection.com in 2012, and I've talked to a lot of lightworkers and a lot of people in this community that many of us were like on fire, just, you know, got all of our ducks in a row and really got our things launched last year.
Wow, I didn't know that. Now I feel definitely part of a stream there.
Yeah.
Flow. That happened for us when I was introduced to my partners, Jonathan and Lori, who are in Toronto. So we did all this very virtually as part of what this new age is about. We had October, November, and part of December to drive towards a December 21st event, which is, you know, as you recall, was a big day for a lot of people in different ways, but we were using that to launch a huge ET celebration at that time. So the website was up and running. It wasn't perfect, but still in beta at that time. But like you mentioned, we were in a rush and realized here's something that has to come together, and we're pulling out all stops and cooperating and putting together what we can, and we'll build on it after that. But we wanted to get it introduced and out there.
Absolutely. And that was the same with me. I mean, 16-hour days, Costa, you know, to get this thing up and running. And something, I, unlike yourself, I am not an ET guru or an IT guru.
You know. IT, ET, hey, okay.
Hey, I think that should be a new bumper sticker, ET guru. Anyway.
Okay, hold that thought.
So, hey, let's get into some juicy stuff. First of all, for those that are new to CE5 anything, can you define CE5?
Yes, I can. It stands for Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. I believe it was coined by Dr. Greer. And it follows on CE, not surprisingly, CE 1, 2, 3, and 4. Off the top of my head, I cannot tell you the textbook definitions of each of those, but they do have very specific definitions which involve a human and a sighting of some kind and the different things that can happen.
Doesn't it originally come from Carl Sagan?
The five doesn't, I believe.
I think the CE3?
The three might, or maybe J. Allen Hynek. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So I'll leave that there. I mean, they're out there. You can Google them, and you can clearly see the differences. And they're there for a reason, because they're specific about the kinds of encounters.
Right.
Now, with the five, that's something new. The ones through four are more passive, not more, they are passive, where something has happened to a human being in terms of an encounter, and then something else happens, and based on that something else happening, you can classify it as a 1, 2, 3, or a 4. With the 5, though, it's human initiated. There are protocols of various types, actually, that you can use to approach ETs, and you as the human initiate it. You start it. Start the conversation. You connect with them, and then it's interactive after that, where they respond and you respond back. And we can get into more detail as you wish about the various kinds of responses. But basically, it's human-initiated contact that's interactive.
So how do you assure, you know, what kind of protocol do you use to assure the proper contact with the proper type of ET, you know, connections? You know,
that's a good question. Consciousness, CE5 is consciousness-based, and that can mean different things to different people. Some people like a meditative approach. Some people use visualization along with meditation. Remote viewing is part of that. In my book, also a heart-centered approach. Any and all of the above, if done with the highest intention of peace, goodwill, love, and sincerity to communicate with benevolent ET civilizations, will yield results eventually. The higher you raise your vibration by whatever means you're used to, like the ones that I just previously mentioned, meditation or prayer, you know, visualization, etc., the higher you raise your vibration by those, that is what the spiritual ET civilizations, who may also be technologically advanced, to me it's actually a continuum, it's really one thing, but the easier they will be able to detect your vibration and be attracted to it and want to interact. And that's really the key, I believe. It's the intention that you have as a human being to do it in a peaceful, conscious, deliberative way where you're sincere. And they will detect you. And they will want to correspond, I mean, to you know, correspond, send you email. Well, that's happening. I made a Freudian slip, but then I thought, well, there's some truth to that. And again, we can talk more about the ways they do respond. But at the very start, that intention of peace and sincerity and goodwill, I believe is just paramount. There are other things you can do. Like I said, you know, whether it's meditation or prayer visualization, those approaches will all work in any combination. But your intention, using your heart, is what will attract the proper right experience to you.
You know, this is a really good topic to discuss because of the fact that there is such a compression on the planet. You know, you've been hearing and reading a lot about whatever you want to call it, archonic activity or, you know, an intensity of conflict between the light and the dark on the planet in these final times, as they refer to it. And one of the things that I've come across is there are some light workers that they're diving into these types of experiences and events where, you know, for example, they're going into an exorcism type environment with a client. And what it has opened up is how do they not get compromised by being exposed to that intense darkness? And I was just wondering if you've run into anything like that in your connections, because, you know, let's face it, everybody that's coming across the ET, you know, letstalk.org, you're not sure of their, you know, their past or their intention or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
You mean as far as the members that come to ET Let's Talk?
Well, yes, but I mean, each one of them, I know it's an individual personal experience, right?
Oh, absolutely, and we honor that because no two people will have that same experience in the same way, and that's the way that it is most of the time.
I think what I'm referring to, Costa, is more like the protection. This is such an important time for the lightworker community to be extremely vigilant in their protection. So you know, your organization do to prevent somebody who's completely unaware. Let's say that they're very, you know, they're very sincere. They've come to you and said, God, Kosha, I really, really want to have contact. And they don't have a whole lot of experience in meditation or even in connecting with their higher selves. You know, what do you do to implement, you know, some very good protocols as far as protection goes?
It starts with what I was alluding to before. I had, when people ask me that question, I advise them to learn a meditation technique, or if they're coming from some other tradition, even traditional religions, every religion has some kind of protective technique that reaches to the highest, to the source of what can be conceived of to protect the individual. So I encourage people to go to that which is most comfortable and familiar firstly, to call protection, to use protection, the techniques they're used to, and then to move forward and do the ET contact from there. You have to start the basis with taking care of yourself. You're so right that at this time of a conflict, a pronounced conflict between light and dark here in the time and space that we find ourselves in, it is important for light workers, no matter where they're going, whether you're doing preparation for an ET contact or an exorcism, like you said, or walking into your office where there's a poisonous political culture.
Yes.
You know, we can think of so many places of negativity and situations that we should be thinking in terms of protection all the time.
I agree. I just think that, you know, as it says on the landing page in my site, one of the things that I feel is a gap is between the UFO community and the spiritual community. You know what I mean? Because of this very topic.
And no, this is maybe just me, but I don't really understand that, because I look at, you say UFO, and let's keep in mind that behind the letters, the acronym of UFO, there are intelligently piloted, in some form, vehicles of some form. So there are individuals, there are beings there. Now, if you posit that those beings can possibly be benevolent and possibly may have reached spiritual heights that human beings have yet to reach, then you start thinking of them as spiritual beings too. Many of our members report in their experiences of waves of love when they encounter a being or a group of them enfolding them. Now, where is that coming from?
Exactly.
It's not coming out of a machine somewhere.
Correct.
It's coming from the beings who have built them or are part of them, because there's some bio type of vehicles too. So what I'm saying is these advanced civilizations don't just have what we think of typically as the technological marvels, but hey, they might be spiritually advanced, do you think, as well? And so is their spirituality any better, or should it not be considered as much as ours? Why isn't there a link between us here on Earth aspiring to a higher spiritual state, no matter what our path, and other civilizations who may have reached those and are aspiring to even higher ones? We have something in common. We're part of the chain of being. We all come from the source, and we need to start by unifying and thinking of ourselves as what we have in common rather than what might be different on the outside. And by the way, if human beings did that with just each other, never mind ETs, we wouldn't have wars on this planet, you know.
We would have a totally different scenario going on.
And we're working for that.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, you made a really good point about the majority of the people that are very, very tuned in and very conscientious about their spiritual growth and their enlightenment and really trying to shake off all the boxes that we've built around ourselves over many, many timelines. You know, most of us are the star seeds. Most of us are the ones that are blazing the trail, and that's our families.
And we don't want to be self-loathing star seeds, okay? If I may borrow a common cliche, and I hear what you're saying, and I get that. That for those of people who do consider themselves star seed, it's like, you know, what do you mean, me, white man? You know, kind of thing. It's like, you are that. If you're sitting there looking at ETs as something, as things apart from you,
yeah,
that you're on your spiritual path and you have nothing to do with them because they don't really affect your spiritual life and your guru hasn't even mentioned them, so maybe it doesn't fit into your conceptual framework. Well, I would say think again about that. If we really believe in things being one, even the dark things are one with us, then we need to address and recognize the entire chain of being, whether we like what we're looking at or not. I mean, I tell you what, I won't say a fear, but I have more of a disgust at what human beings have done on this planet than what any possible thing I could conceive of that ETs might have done that people attribute to them.
Absolutely.
So we have to look at our own shadow, get along with ourselves, then get along with each other. And then maybe we will look attractive to other civilizations that have gotten over that separation kind of thing and are circling our skies and waiting to be welcomed rather than shot at, which is what mostly happens.
I know, and it's funny, you're talking to the choir here, because I just did a recording on this very topic where I was putting out a call to all the light worker community, et cetera, that we need to stop thinking that if we see something that is what we perceive to be negative or we perceive to be the old paradigm, you know, we need to stop looking at like, God, I don't want to look at that, or I don't need to look at that, or, you know, because that is still part of us and part of the whole event that we're going through. And until we come to total peace with it and we can look at it from a position of neutrality, you know, we're going to continue to have more blockages instead of being able to flow right through it.
I agree. We need to redeem. We all have shadows, and individuals build together to create societies that have shadows and nations that have shadows. Yeah, we all have to deal with that, and as ugly as it is sometimes. But we know when you come out the other end of that and say you've transmuted dark into light, which we're all capable of doing, and we're doing it all the time, boy, doesn't it feel great. And you realize, man, I want more of this. What possible new vistas are there? If I can succeed in being a better human being, then I will build a better city, a better state, a better nation, a better planet, and then become extraplanetary and join the community of nations that are out there who are there wanting to join us. I had an experience, well, actually my wife did, who is clairvoyant, and she, during one of our CE5 events one night, and we do these monthly, by the way, although people can do them any day of the week, any time, but we just coordinate monthly on etletstalk.org, and I can speak about that later too. But during one of those events, my wife, for just a few seconds, while looking at the darkness of a clear black sky and space, was prompted by her higher guidance, her guides, to look in a certain spot. And as she looked, and I believe it was towards Orion, suddenly she said it looked as if a patch of sky peeled back, the way you might have, you know, grabbed a slice of an orange peel as you're peeling it, just peel it back. It peeled back for just a second, as if to reveal something that was behind it. And what was behind it, she saw, was just an amazing number of lights. And she knew they were all StarCraft that are here.
Very cool.
They were cloaked. They were showing themselves, but they were showing her, we are here, you can't see us. And this was, like I said, a small patch of sky. So very quickly, the part that peeled back went back into place.
Yes.
It was the regular nighttime sky with a few stars sprinkled there in the area of Orion.
Right.
But this was so instructive, because if in that small patch, the density of lights and intelligence that was out there were to be imagined, how it would fill the whole sky, then what you really have are many civilizations, starships, probably in the millions, parked out there.
That was what I was going to ask you, is how many ships do you think are actually surrounding our planet right now? I've read so many different reports.
And I'm not going to give you a number because I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
I haven't gotten that memo yet.
But we are the big stage performance at this time in the galaxy.
I think we're putting on, sadly, quite the show.
Yes.
But here's the thing too that I want to leave with people listening, that we are at this critical stage right now, attracting this kind of attention from all parts of the cosmos because of the potential we have to either destroy our planet or to emerge in a beautiful burst of light, love, and power into the cosmos and be ones who will join the community of star nations. We're ready for that birth. We're going through it. And of course, all these star nations are here interested in this, helping where they're allowed to by our free will for us to make the transition. But I'm sure they're recognizing that we have to do much of the work as human beings ourselves. Yet we still will have the assistance if we ask for it. So we're at this very critical time. And many people I've heard will look and say, especially if they believe themselves to be starseeds, why did I volunteer for this mission? This is such a yucky place to be. You know, wars, famine, elitists, financial crashes. I mean, the list just does go on.
Yeah,
and people can go into despair. So they ask themselves, if they believe they're starseeds, why did I volunteer to come here? One answer that we have received that might explain that is something that surprised me when I heard it, and then it gave me a lot of hope. The answer was, this is your reward. Being here now is your reward. Why? Well, if you've been here quite a while on the planet, or maybe you just arrived, but especially if you've been here for a while through many incarnations, you have suffered through everything that it means to be human. And a lot of it hasn't been pretty, and some of it maybe has been. But you've gone through this human experience, the ups and downs, the dark and the light. And maybe you've been real frustrated with the mission that you came in because you could envision it, but it just hasn't really come to fruition the way that you wanted to, because there's still this battle between light and dark, and it's not over yet. So you, starseed, or you just earthborn person, may have felt through your many incarnations that you've failed and failed and failed again at making things right on a global scale and bringing about this universal peace. However, that answer that we got about this being a reward means in this lifetime, a lot of us are here now, and we get to see the victory of the light.
Yes.
This is that moment. The reward is you get to take the victory lap, dude.
That's so true. God, Costa, that just gave me chills. I mean, it is so to the core of my being that I know that we are making progress, that we are becoming victorious. I mean, that's what my site's all about. I tend to focus on what's going on that's good. Where are we progressing? Where has the light, you know, kind of etched away the darkness? That's what we need to be focusing on, because that's the time that we're in. And, you know, you can go into all kind of prophecy and all different types of cultures. The bottom line is we are finally at that gate, and it's an honor to be alive right now if you have the perspective to see that.
And it gives you inspiration and hope. I totally agree with what you're saying. It's an honor to be alive right now. And it doesn't mean we still don't have our ups and downs, but when you stand back and look at the big picture and go, you know, of all the beings in the universe, we've heard many of them volunteered. There were lines waiting to come to Earth, and some at the head of the line, when they saw someone better prepared to do a mission on Earth, would step back in the line to let someone else go through. That's the kind of honor.
And the other thing that's a huge gift for all of us, I mean, I think we tend to forget about this, is things are happening so quickly. We talk about how time's flying by, and actually I'm in a place where I'm not even in time anymore a lot of the times. But what we're also forgetting is, because of that, we also get responses when we are in need. You know, haven't you noticed? I mean, compare yourself to, say, 10 years ago, where, you know, you had a really bad day at work. You know, you spilled your coffee on your pants. This person talked back to you. You know, the correspondence was screwed up. Your email didn't make it. You were late to, you know, whatever. Today, it just seems like if you can just get centered for just a minute and ask for, you know, I just need composure and I need assistance. Man, it's there. It's there.
And that's the acceleration of everything.
Yes.
And it's the acceleration of the dark being revealed so that the light can transmute it. So I agree with you. It's speeded up. And then that's all to the good, because I figure the faster it goes, the faster we can get to the solution, and I get to take that victory lap. I want to high five everybody who's along for the ride and will be lapping around that track with me. The help is there, and you know, look at the things that are possible that weren't possible 10 years ago. My partners and I started ETLetsTalk.org using a technology that, you know, 15 or 20 years ago just simply wasn't there, you know, called the internet. We were able to reach out and pretty quickly, in a matter of a few months, find almost 3,000 people now who are dedicated to a social network of people who are doing ET contact. I mean, how cool is that? Could I have predicted that when I was a kid? I was into UFOs when I was a kid and marveled at all that, but even in my highest imagination, and I have a pretty good imagination, I did not imagine that as an adult, I could so easily conceive of an idea to bring a community together and then find that community, bring it together, and keep growing it. You know, we haven't seen the end yet. We've just begun.
Right.
That's what the technology has brought us. And that's what the opportunity of the times has brought us, because there's so many people out there who have, and I use this in the most inclusive term as I can, or in the most inclusive way that I can. Most people have a spiritual hunger.
Yeah.
And that manifests in so many ways. And we've been discovering that many people have been looking to the skies and always wondered if we were alone, and then decided, no, we're not alone. And now they've taken the next step and they're part of a social community going, damn it, I know not only am I not alone, but I can communicate.
Right.
With those others out there who want to befriend me and want to help in the manner that an elder brother and sister or a cousin may want to help.
Well, think of the light grid that's being built within that network, you know, because we build all kinds of different grids around ourselves. And, you know, think of the beauty in that, which leads me to, you mentioned something about the types of ET contact experiences that you've had. Can you go into a little bit of what would be the typical body sensation that someone would experience? You know, what kind of shifts are they, you know, sharing with you that they've had when they get ET contact?
That's a great question. And there's no one answer. I don't mean to be evasive. Every person is different, although there is commonality. If you talk to enough people, you will find clumps of similar experiences. In the body, some people will, if they're a visual type of person, they may actually see an ET face, like in a lucid dream, or there in front of them, kind of semi-materialized. That has happened. Other people may feel a wave of love, and they will feel intuitively that it's coming from several individuals that they may not be able to see while they've been doing the ET contact, but they feel that love. Other people will, like what's happened to me, feel a touch or a shove on the shoulder, like, hey, I'm here. I know you can't see me, but I'm here. Or a wiggling of the nose where something touches you there, and you know that there's no one overtly there, but that's the method they're using at the time. What I would like to emphasize is, because it's not totally safe for these ET races to fully materialize on Earth in every situation for every person all the time, they do get away with it, but not 100% of the time. They will choose the method and the time for that's safest for them and for you, who is connecting to them, in order to reach you. And that may mean sometimes they're able to show up in the sky. And we've had many, many sightings, as I'm sure many of your listeners have, where you see something that you know is not of this earth because of the way it's flitting about, or how fast it's going, or how it's flashing in response to your thoughts and communicating with you. But there are other times when, as I just mentioned, they may come as a wave of love. They may touch you on the shoulder. You may partly see them there, partly not. They may cause weird electrical phenomenon. iPhones suddenly turning on and playing some tune that is very meaningful in the moment, out of the blue, and others that I've forgotten so many of them. But if people go to etletstalk.org and go to the forum there where we post our monthly reports, then you will see the variety of methods of contact that will just blow your mind, what people have experienced. And this is all their experience. You cannot take that away from them. No figure of authority can walk up to them and say, move right along, nothing to see here. You didn't see what you saw, sign this form and forget all about it.
Yeah, they can't take your soul away, and you can't take your like you were saying, your experiences away from you. You know, that's your precious.
Right. And if you know you were not under the influence of drugs or alcohol or anything else, and you were fully awake and experiencing this, you own that. And that's a springboard that will take you into infinity and beyond, is that experience and that sense of I own this.
You know,
last month we had 600 teams at etletstalk.org who were in 34 different countries that were making contact. It was a record-breaking month. And though not all of them are the type that will write and post their experience up on the forums at our website, a number of them have written in. And that's really what's the secret sauce, is when you have a community like that who have experiences and then they post them, so that others can share and be inspired and be educated, then that's really powerful. That's really synergistic. And that's, again, the real secret sauce of what we're doing at etletstalk.org.
You know, there's two questions that came up. Number one, clarify for the audience why they have a difficult time appearing in this dimensional level. So that's number one. And number two, where are you finding the most UFO contact reports coming from?
Answer the first question, by whatever name you want to call them, and there are different labels used, whether the label is Illuminati, Cabal, financial elites, the control group, it goes on and on. There is a recognition, and you don't have to go far now if your mind is open and you look, and the movie Sirius actually points this out, as other movies have, like Thrive, and other good documentaries. There is a control group that has been manipulating the financial, political, social systems of Earth, depending on who you talk to, for hundreds of years or maybe thousands of years. That group has achieved immense financial and military power, and has reverse engineered the technologies that our ET friends have used to get here from distances far away by going through dimensions and above the point, the crossing point of light, and et cetera, et cetera. They have reversed and engineered some of those technologies and militarized them. Surprise, surprise. That's what primates do. They try to find a bigger club.
Yeah.
That's why
primates are lizards, Costa.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. I love monkeys and chimpanzees more than anybody else, but there's just some bad behavior sometimes, and I'm not immune to it myself either, I guess. So this control group, by whatever name, has had a huge control game going on, and they've militarized outer space. We haven't been told about all the stuff they put up there. Star Wars back in the Reagan days was not only meant to be a counter to the threat of the Soviet Union during Cold War days, but some of those weapons were pointed towards space. And they have successfully, here and there, shot down ETs. And they've had teams that retrieve bodies, that retrieve the hardware, and they reverse engineer it to build even a better weapon. And I know I'm oversimplifying it, but that's why the danger is there. You ask me why that the ETs can't fully manifest and land on the White House lawn like everyone wants them to. At least Americans want them to. Don't forget, the world does not revolve around America. You know, why don't they land on the Kremlin lawn or somewhere in Ottawa? You know, the Canadians are a whole lot more peaceful than we are.
Well, you know what? You answered exactly what I was hoping you would answer, because I just want people to be aware that we are the ones that have been, you know, confrontative and And of course, we've been quarantined. Why? Because we are the bullies on the block.
That's right. And I don't think there's any nation that's immune to it, but some are worse behaved than others. The United States has military bases, and I know I'm getting my number wrong, but you'll get the scale. Is it 150 places all over the world, bases? I mean, if that isn't an empire, a military empire, then tell me what is. The United States
Not to interrupt you, but how of those 150 bases are you talking about active bases? Because there's probably a whole bunch more that are inactive with nefarious things going on underground.
Black projects, absolutely. Uh-huh. And many researchers have found some of those. You know, you can refer to David Wilcock, to Dr. Greer, and others who talk about the underground bases and where the secret projects have gone on that have some of these most advanced destructive technologies. And they do get used against star visitors. Do I believe for a moment that if the star visitors wanted to use their technologies to immediately nullify everything, they probably could, but they might put in danger some of us in the process.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So out of compassion and a lot of wisdom, they can only take measured responses, exclusively probably defensive ones, to protect themselves and the people who contact them. Anyway, our teams haven't reported anything really that nefarious. The thing that I would say that you have more fear of if you wanted to go there would be what the humans do. I don't really believe in negative ET races. I'm sure they're out there somewhere in the galaxy because maybe they haven't evolved in the same way we haven't here. But the ones engaging us right now, I firmly believe, are benevolent, and that we have more to be concerned about when we look at the humans and their bad behavior on Earth than we do when we look out into space.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. Well, so on to, your 3,000 plus members that have been reporting in, where are the hot spots showing up throughout the world?
That depends on the distribution. Most of our members are in North America and in Europe, although they're represented in other countries. I would say Canada. I just saw a report on mainstream TV on the internet, actually, from a mainstream broadcast that said that UFO sightings had doubled since last year.
I saw that same one. Blogged that. I was really impressed that it made mainstream news.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And I am not going to make the claim that despite the fact we have 2 to 3 dozen teams actively involved every month spread all over Canada, that they are responsible for that. But my God, if they didn't contribute to that doubling, I don't know what they were doing, because they report back that they're having results, and some of them are videotaping the results. So Canada's one place.
Well,
the others, I haven't really tabulated numbers.
You know, I was looking at UFO statistics yesterday, and I was so amazed, because you live in California also, right? I mean,
that's
we're both
right.
Live in California.
Right.
And I was just so amazed how much hot activity there is kind of in what they call the triangle, the red triangle, I believe. You know what I'm talking about? It's around Kernville. It goes into Nevada and down into Arizona. I mean, it's just a huge hotspot for UFO activity. And, of course, many have said that that's where the Ashtar Command is located as well.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm not a member of many traditional kind of UFO organizations, so I'm not up on the latest, as you mentioned, the Red Triangle. I had not heard of that, so I don't say that I'm an expert in that field as such. What I am an expert in is just knowing what our members are doing, trying to grow the site and our activity. In some contacts that we've had, the ETs have directly asked us as a community to put as many teams as we can, as quickly as we can, in as many places as we can. And the reason is, as more of us interact with them and call them forth to appear as best they can, they will do that, and they will appear in our skies more often because there's more of us doing it. As they appear more often, more humans will see them and want to do the same thing. Maybe they'll find our site, maybe they'll find another one, but they may start invoking and communicating. That will allow the ETs to show up in even more places. So what you see there is that a virtuous circle has been created, a feedback loop, where we call them, they show up, more of us call them, more of them show up, more and more of us call them, more. And we're going to come to a tipping point at some point where the control group cannot possibly suppress everything going on all over the planet. And the tipping point will come where they will lose their control one way or the other. And that's a whole nother topic.
Right. I mean, obviously we won't be able to get into everything today. I can always try to see if I can get you back in here. You know, one good thing to share is, how has ET contact changed your life? Well, how has it impacted you?
I would say tremendously. I find myself working those 16-hour days you talked about, doing this passion, which I consider a mission. But it's given me hope, and I'll tell you why. If I didn't have a hope that other civilizations had conquered the darkness within themselves and gone out to the stars and had spiritual growth while doing that, or maybe as a result of having spiritual growth, if I didn't believe they were out there, I would look around me today at the sad state of what human beings are doing on Earth and be despairing a whole lot more, like many people are. But it's given me hope as I have gotten deeper into this and I've had my own kind of contact in many different ways, that I know they're here. They're here, they're clear, get used to it, you know? And that gives me hope. Now, a lot of people may say, like my wife did years ago in 2006 when I actively got into this again, I went to my first training for a week with Dr. Greer at Mount Shasta. And my wife was very supportive and said, you know, I know that they're out there, but I don't see what relevance they have to my daily life. But, you know, you go right along, have a great time. You know, I support you. Well, I did that. And then I would call her every day afterward, after the preceding night's expedition out under the stars where we would make contact. And I would tell her what we had seen. About the third or fourth day along, she told me, wait a minute, before you told me what you saw last night out in the field, I have an experience. At the foot of our bed last night in our home, my wife is clairvoyant, she saw four, maybe five, 4 foot high bipedal white beings that were staring at her in a kind of who are you type of fashion, just checking her out, you know, because they didn't know what the context was. They had followed an energy, a heart connection for me in Mount Shasta while I was making contact back to our home, because they could tell there was a presence there and they were showing up looking at her. Mm-hmm. And she was very happy. They were right there and they were very sweet. She said, just very sweet and loving. And they told her they were from Arcturus.
Interesting.
Now, that's just a cool story. But the next thing she said to me was, next year I'm coming with you to the training.
Yeah, that's good.
It's real now for her. And I will also say the technologies they have will make it real to everybody. If you're someone who's going to work, living your life, trying to pay your bills and raise your children and everything that most of us are doing in every country of the world, you may wonder what the relevance would be to Starbitters visitors, or like, what does it matter to me? Well, it matters a lot. If the free energy that they're working with were instituted on Earth, imagine you would have free energy that's clean all the time forever. Never pay a utility bill. Something the size of your suitcase, just as an example, could run your house. You'd run your car for free. You'd run your factory, your school, your city, your lives. Wars over fossil fuels wouldn't have to happen because we would have free energy all over the planet. Poverty would be ended. Hunger would be ended. We'd have more leisure time because we wouldn't have to work to make these daily bills.
You know, because
free energy, that's how it affects people. It's very relevant.
It is very relevant. And when I realized that, you know, a lot of people look at UFO disclosure and they say, oh, you know, the government just doesn't want us to know about, you know, these other types of beings because it'll scare us, or, we won't know how to interact with them because it's a completely different, galaxy or way of interacting. Oh, it could cause all kinds of problems and panic. And so many people really believe that that's out of the kindness of the government's heart. They're preventing us from having that contact. But when you really delve in and you really realize that the number one reason that it has occurred is because of the free energy secrets, that's it in a nutshell, folks. I mean,
There's a $600 trillion fossil fuel economy, that's all tied in with, Goldman Sachs and the financial control and the military industrial complex, all interwoven. The movie Sirius talks about that. Thrive talks about that. Yeah, that's the real reason. It's money, greed, power, control over this planet. It's not about concern for us. You know what? If when most people are told the truth and the good that's in it for them, most people, 99.999% of us, will do the right thing. But the control group has used Hollywood and scare movies about aliens invading. I mean, look at the TV shows and the movies that come out. Follow the money that has made all these. They have a vested interest in us being afraid, being very afraid of our elder brothers and sisters, so that when we stay in fear, we're more easily controlled, manipulated, and then we won't welcome them here, and we'll continue to accept this secrecy, believing that they're doing it for our own good. Well, they're not. They're doing it just for the opposite, for their own good. And that game is ending now.
Yay!
Yeah.
Speaking of which, regarding the citizens hearing for the truth, the UFO disclosure, what do you feel is going on the flip side, on the back end of this being completed? What do you feel are the implications from those hearings so far? What has been your latest intel, so to speak?
I don't have an inside track on that because I'm not overtly involved with the Paradigm, the exopolitics group that put it on. Although I was present during the first day of those hearings, and I was blown away by how well they were done and by the caliber of the people who showed up on the political side and on the panelist side.
Yes.
Now, what the implications are, I don't know what those six politicians will do with all the information they were given. They had testimony from some of the top researchers in this field in the world in front of them, and it clearly affected them because, as I watched just in the space of one day, actually in the space of a few hours, their questioning, which started out with, just give me the facts, we're listening, we're following up, we just want to know what you know, and panelist after panelist gave riveting testimony, some of it firsthand. So they gathered the facts. Well, I'll tell you, by the I'd say the middle of the afternoon, after they'd been hearing all the top researchers just blow them away with the reality of this from so many angles, the questioning of these politicians changed from, yes, please tell me what you know, to, oh my God, what can we do? And I saw them asking that, what can we do? I don't remember which one. It might have been Senator Mike Gravel. It might have been the other gentleman's
Yeah,
name.
that was a really moving testimony.
Yeah, and I'll allude to that in a second, but I think it was he that finally just stopped and said, would you, the panelists, the assembled people who were the witnesses for that week, would you provide us with a summary by Friday when these proceedings close about what we can do after we leave from here? This was, like I said, just a few hours into this. It didn't take 4 days to convince these people.
Right.
Senator Gravel says they came in as skeptics, probably open-minded skeptics, but by that afternoon they were asking, oh my God, what can we do?
Right.
Now, what will they do may be a totally different thing. The summary that they were given, I don't know where that is or what it looks like, but I assume it was prepared and given to them. What will they do with it? We don't know. I can't speak for them. However, the videos of Senator Mike Gravel, of Daniel Sheehan, of others, of Paul Hellyer, that are making it over the internet now are being very educational for a lot of people. Those would not have happened had it not been for those hearings. So there is a consequence. There's good stuff coming out of this, whether or not it results in formal hearings in the U.S. Congress. I'm not going to hold my breath for that. However, in the UN, there is a move afoot to have some country put forward a resolution to be voted on so that some agency is formed within the UN that studies this topic and will, in an open-minded fashion. So there
exactly.
may be...
Exactly. And that's, you know what, Costa, that's the number one thing that needs to be addressed and ridden home with all of us is the government is not going to provide us what we want. You know, we may not ever see disclosure through the government because they don't really have a vested interest in doing so. But what it does do is it awakens enough of us to take action to create that disclosure ourselves.
And that's exactly what we're doing. I call it the People's Disclosure Movement. Where governments have failed, we the people will lead. We will accomplish. And when the people lead, the leaders eventually will have to follow. I mean, imagine if we had, I don't know, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, 100 contact teams here at etletstalk.org in every country of the world doing our work like we do, coordinating together just one day a month.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands of teams. And if the ETs were responding in the kind of numbers that they promised that they could, how long would it be before not only would it not be suppressed anymore by the control group, but before people who laughed at this subject have to suddenly start taking it more seriously? A tipping point's going to happen, and we're part of an evolution, a revolution right now of ET human contact. And we're organizing it. And as the numbers get bigger, we are making our own future. The ETs have told us that when we get together and pray, meditate, visualize, remote view with them in order to co-create a new world of justice, we are creating an alternate future reality for Earth. We're creating a portal that all of us can pass through. So,
they will show up, you know?
They will show up. Right. The days of powerlessness are gone.
Right.
Every person listening to this
right.
has the power to come to our site, to join, to find others of like mind, and using our community map there, if they're a paid member, and it's a very inexpensive membership, they can go to the map, like as with Google, and find their location, find little dots of people around them and see the email of someone else that's nearby that they can join with so that they have company. So that community map has hundreds and hundreds all over the world of these contact groups that they can contact close by or far away. And
well, that sounds great, Costa. We're running out of time. So before we close this interview today, is there any last minute announcement that you want to make?
I would say that people out there, if you want to do ET communication, come to etletstalk.org. This is a shameless plug, but I truly, truly believe this is the people's movement. It's your empowerment out there, your ability as an individual to really make a difference now at a very critical time. So come join us at etletstalk.org, read the forums, support us financially, meet other people there who are like mind, and start doing the contact at least once a month with us that we do. Help us get from 600 teams that we had last month in 34 countries to thousands of teams someday. That's what I would urge people to do. This is where the action is. We're on the vanguard.
Cool. Well, you guys heard it from the expert, Costa Macreas. And I would just ask everybody today, please, please remember that there are a lot of shenanigans going on to create, divide, and conquer within our own communities, our UFO communities, our spiritual communities, even the conspiracy theory communities. Be aware of what is being posted out there and stop attacking ourselves. We must be united to get through this incredible time. So with that said, everybody have a wonderful day. Thanks for listening. Costa, thank you for coming today. We appreciate your time and experience. And we will talk to you guys next Tuesday.
Thank you.